Welcome to Ujiria, broadcasting live from Business Radio X Studios. Ujiria is a Greek word meaning health of body and mind in aging individuals. Ujiria Radio is a weekly show celebrating the heroes that contribute to the Ujiria of our elderly and disabled population. Now joining us in the studio are your hosts, Sam Grass and Brad Culp.
Good morning. This is Sam Grass in Atlanta, Georgia. And joining me today in the studio is Lee Cantor, our producer. And I got a problem, Lee. What's wrong with that introduction?
There was nothing wrong. It's your ears.
What a beautiful way to begin the show. Today's show is going to be a little different, same as last week, but a little different from the normal format in that we have no guests from Dallas, Texas. Dallas is in the midst of another ice and snowstorm, and city is basically shut down. If you recall, last week we had the same situation. So it's just going to be a broadcast and our guest here in Atlanta, Georgia. And joining us as our guest in Atlanta is the Reverend Cheryl Wild Divine Burney. How are you, Cheryl?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing well. Kind of jumping back to Lee, we're set to get this weather tonight again, are we not?
I'm not a weatherman, Sam. My weather skills are looking out the window. That's how
Which you don't have.
Exactly. So to me, it's about 80 in here. That's not what it is outside.
You know, I'm trying to eat up airtime, and he's not cooperating with me.
No. But I know that there was a winter alert on 400 on the polls. So we're good to go.
Thank you, Cheryl. I think you and I will just finish the show.
We will.
Okay. Cheryl has many different hats that she wears. Specifically, we're going to address two of those hats today. The first is she is the Director of Complementary Therapies and Volunteers for Amity Care Hospice. And then she is the creator and owner of another organization called LifeWorks.
Yes.
Before we get to those two organizations, Cheryl, why don't you tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself, your background, just a little history.
Okay. I am first and foremost a damned Yankee, I was told when I came down here.
Lee, now you have company.
Finally.
When I first came down here, I am from New Jersey, and when I first came down here, which was in 1974, I was working at Fred Astaire Dance Studios. I had done that for about 8 years, teaching ballroom dancing. And we had a dance party, as we normally do on a Friday night. And one of our guests was a elderly woman, wraith-like. And she proceeded to tell me that I was a damned Yankee. And did I know what that was? No, ma'am. That's a Yankee who came down and stayed. So that was my introduction to the South. And I have stayed.
So that's Southern hospitality they always talk about, right?
Yes, and bless their hearts. Yes, so I did stay because it was an interesting place to be. 1974 to now, I've seen a lot of changes, so it's been a lot of fun.
Have you been in Atlanta since 74?
I have.
Oh, apps. You've seen it grown from a sleepy southern town to the metropolitan
sleepy semi-urban town that it is.
Sleepy, I don't know if it's the right word, but yes.
Well, 400 ended at Holcomb Bridge, and when you get off Holcomb Bridge, you could only go to the right to Norcross.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I introduced you as the Reverend, so I want you to tell us about that. And then tell us how you came to be with Amity Care Hospice.
Well, I was born and raised Catholic, and so I'm one of those baby boomers, obviously, at this point. So at some point over the last 20 years, I had an experience that led me to take a different path. And actually, I was cantering in the Catholic Church, and I was kneeling during the consecration, and tears were streaming down my face because I wanted to be able to invite people to the table, and I couldn't. And that was pretty painful. And so I decided that, okay, I need to think about this. And I sat with it for a few more years, and then I had a meditation experience that in which I experienced God in a way that I never had before, and that changed everything for me. And I ended up going to a church that meets at the Woodruff Arts Center on Sundays. They've been there about 30 years now, the Spiritual Living Center of Atlanta. And And after taking a few classes, I realized they were talking about my experience, and I decided to become a minister through that particular church. And they've since changed their names. It was the Church of Religious Science, akin to Christian Science. And now it's the International Centers for Spiritual Living.
And how did that lead you to Amity Care Hospice, or did it?
That didn't. Actually, when I was working as a lay minister in St. Anne's Catholic Church in Marietta, I took a class to become a hospice volunteer. And I was a volunteer for about a year, and it was very interesting for me because we've had a lot of deaths in our family. Up to then, we had 5 deaths in a year and a half when I was in my 20s. And then from 1995 to now, we've had about 15 deaths in my family. So it's been a lot to deal with. And I had that 1 year, and then I didn't get involved with hospice again for a while until I was, what was I doing? I became a hypnotherapist for about 20 years, and I was ready to kind of move on a little bit. And a friend of mine said, why don't you, they're interviewing for volunteer coordinators over here. I think you'd be great. That was actually Essie Freed, my friend. And so I went, and as I sat in this interview, and the woman explained the job to me, and I had done some investigation, but I thought to myself, oh, my God, how perfect. Mm-hmm. And so I started working with another hospice that shall remain nameless for the moment. But I started working with another hospice and as their volunteer coordinator, and I've been there ever since.
Well, obviously, that's part of your title with Amity Care. So tell our listeners what it is that a volunteer coordinator does.
They do just that. They recruit, train, schedule, and manage a core of volunteers. And the volunteers can perform many duties. I mean, hospice is a Medicare benefit that everyone is entitled to. And so Medicare, the government, requires every hospice that is CHAP certified to have volunteers. And it's to help defray the cost. So if somebody needs a volunteer and we don't have one, then we would have to send in a CNA, and that's $12.50 an hour, roughly, and that's being paid for by Medicare. So if a volunteer goes in, that's saving them $12.50 an hour. So the volunteers can serve in lots of different ways. They can do administrative volunteering, help in the office. They can bake. They can sew. They can knit. They can visit. They can, the things that they can do are limited only to our imagination. And you know, for me, I mean, I've even had volunteers that sang. Some of them do what's called a remembering project so that they interview patients and take a collection of their photographs and put them together like you have at a funeral, and they can create a remembering, a CD that has the pictures and the, on there for them. So they can have that.
That's interesting. I've been involved with a number of hospice organizations and never have developed the idea of hospice being an organization required to use volunteers. So let's speak about that a little bit. Let's develop that line for our listeners. If we would have listeners out there that whose ears were kind of perked up when you talked about volunteers.
Right.
How should they go about getting involved and finding out what might be appropriate and what hospice might be appropriate for them?
Well, certainly you want to find a hospice that services your area, and because volunteers, especially these days, are going to want to volunteer close to their own home so they don't have to travel as much. Most people would anyway. Second of all, of course, you want to have an interest in working with an elderly population for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can just choose any hospice. I mean, that you just choose a hospice and call and get information. And you want to find a place that you resonate with, obviously. I mean, because you're going to be working with the volunteer coordinator for the most part. So you want to make sure that you at least feel comfortable with that person.
You know, as you were speaking, Cheryl, it seems to me the first thing that comes to my mind is, well, why would I want to do this? This is people who are in the end stages of life. Why would I enjoy this? Can you speak to why there's joy in doing this?
Oh, Well, I think when I volunteered originally, the reason I volunteered was because we had those five deaths. And back in 1974, hospice, I think, was actually started in 1976. Well, there wasn't hospice back then. Mm-hmm. And there was no way to really, excuse me, there was no way to really talk about this experience or even what to do with all of it. And so I had some residue pain left from those deaths. And they presented the opportunity at the church. Someone came and talked to us, and I thought, well, this would be really interesting. Let me find out about this. And so it was for me a way to be present to people that I felt might not have anyone with them at the time they died.
Okay. I think we can develop this by directing it to you personally. If you personally were to go out into a home for someone who was in hospice, regardless of what stage, what joy do you get out of just being there and serving them? Tell us, can you tell us an experience? Maybe that's the best way to ask the question.
Even whether I'm working or whether I'm volunteering, it's the same thing. The opportunity to be present, and this doesn't happen very often, but the opportunity to be present at the actual moment of death, mm-hmm. or even in that those days just before, mm-hmm. it's an extremely powerful, energetically powerful time and sacred. And I think, and this is going to be a little mystical, but I think everybody can handle this. I think that, you know, when we come into the world, we have midwives that invite us in and encourage us to come out of the womb. And I feel like on this side, when someone is dying, that we can be kind of like midwives, just present to them and encouraging them, if only in spirit, to cross over the threshold onto the other side.
Is there a, for lack of a better term, a ministry going on between the volunteer and the living family members as well?
Yes. Sometimes the patient is not alert or aware or communicative, and while many volunteers would actually like to build a relationship with them and to be present in that way, it's not always possible. And you have family members that are hurting and need someone to talk to sometimes. And volunteers understand, because they've been trained and because they have a heart for this, where other family members and friends may not be able to be as present in a way that that person might need. You know, our society in America, at least, tends to be death phobic and grief phobic. Mm-hmm. So you're only allowed a certain amount of time to talk about these things before people just like, aren't you over that already? You know, and so this gives them a place where they know it's safe. There's someone that they know that they can talk to.
If somebody's considering being a volunteer, which I'm sure you're always looking for volunteers, right? There's probably
all volunteer coordinators are looking for volunteers.
Can you just share a little bit about what they're doing on a day-to-day basis so they get some kind of an understanding of what their responsibilities would be and what their responsibilities aren't?
It depends on what path they've chosen to take as a volunteer. If it's administrative, they would be working in an office, and it would be up to them to set their time. Of course, if you're working in an office, you have to adhere to the office hours.
Sure.
If you're volunteering with a family or a patient, then you're going to set your time, your visit time up with them. Mm-hmm. So let's just say, Lee, that you're going to volunteer for Sam over
here. For Sam, because he needs help.
Right, he needs lots of help. I can see that by look on his face right now, especially. So you're going to volunteer. And so what I would do is, after you're trained and you're ready to go.
So there's training. You're not going to just throw me in with Sam because he's...
Oh, no. And there are things that volunteers have to do in order to be a volunteer. There are things that you have to do. You have to go through training.
You can't just show up and think that you're going to be helping people the next day.
No. You have to go through a very specific training. You have to have TB shots that we provide. TB testing, right, which we provide. And a background check, of course, because we want to protect our patients and families.
Sure.
That's really imperative. So the volunteer has to really want to do this. And when they're done with that, then what I would do is if I have a request, then I go through my list of volunteers to see who's in the area, who would best fit this family, and then I will call and ask. And if the volunteer is is interested, then I will connect them with the family. Right. I will sometimes go with them and introduce them, and then I allow them to set it up. So frequently they'll be visiting one time a week or two times a week. And we will set that up as a very specific thing, because that's like a prescription from a doctor.
Right. And then what would they be doing? Like, what would I be doing at Sam? I'm just hanging out with him?
With Sam?
Watching TV?
Being in the comatose state that he's in, you'd probably want to read to him. It depends. If the patient is alert and aware, then you're actually helping them socialize. You're part of their socialization.
Right.
You're another person for them to speak with about whatever's on their mind, and they might want to get personal. They might want to keep it light.
Right.
But you can bring in news of the day and things like that, or talk about their family.
But is it something that I have to do? Like, am I mowing his lawn? Am I doing things around the house? Am I cooking him lunch?
That depends. If you're for the patient, then you're visiting the patient. If you're a volunteer, like, for instance, my husband has a cleaning business, and he volunteers so that if there's a family that's just really struggling, and you know, when you're caring for somebody, sometimes the house just goes
right,
to pot. And
sure.
So he will go in sometimes once a month for that family, and he will clean. He will, as a volunteer, he will
so
go
I,
and clean.
I can do whatever is needed. And I have,
yes.
But it's not required for me to mow their lawn. But if
no.
I feel
yes.
Motivated to do that, I'm like, I want to help any way I can, so I'll do this
yes.
for them.
We try to figure out what it is that the family needs. We listen to them, we ask them,
right,
and then we try to match up and
right,
yeah.
Let's for those people again who might be interested in volunteering. I think it's important to establish that hospice, we're not talking about the final days of life.
No.
Speak to that. Speak to that this can be a situation for extended period of situation.
Right. Hospice, the government requires as a Medicare benefit that the person have a diagnosis that says that there's a life-limiting illness, which means that their prognosis is for life is 6 months or less. Now, that doesn't mean that they have to die within 6 months. Okay.
It's not a contract. Right?
No, it's not a contract. And, you know, most people listen to that and go, oh, my God, they're angels of death. Oh, Lord, no. No, no, no. What that means is that the disease following the natural progression. Well, what disease follows the natural progression anyway?
Right.
Most of them don't. So we've had patients on service for a day. We've had patients come on service and be on service for a year, or sometimes even two, as long as we can show that they're still, you know, declining. I mean, however infinitesimally small that decline might be, as long as we can document that and prove that they need our services, then we're there.
Yeah, Lee's heard this 100 times. My father's a clear example. He had a COPD admitted into hospice, obviously with a terminal diagnosis, ended up getting better and was in hospice for 4 years.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a longer time than normal. But yes, that's
obviously
possible.
Hospice was not there on a weekly basis because he got so well. But anytime right. we wanted something, we called the hospice for 4 years.
Yes. So. And it's a home benefit. They don't have to go into a facility. They can stay in their own home and be comfortable, surrounded by their family and whatever. So, yeah, and I actually encourage people. We talked a little bit about this before the radio show. I would actually encourage people, if you've got someone who's ill and there is a life-limiting illness, then please call hospice in sooner rather than later. You would benefit from all the services they offer.
Yeah.
And one of the main benefits is that you develop relationships with these people, and they will follow you all the way through the death and afterwards. We stay with our families for 13 months, mm-hmm. offering bereavement services if they want it. I mean, they don't have to, but we're there for them if they need it. And that's really important, because like I said, in today's world, people, after 3 months, it's like, oh, you know, yeah. what's wrong?
Well, and also hospice isn't necessarily some other place. Hospice could be their home, right? It's not like right. you have to go to a hospice. Hospice right. can come to you.
Exactly. Hospice is not a place. It is a service that is,
right.
it's a service that's rendered. And so we come to the patient wherever the patient is. If the patient is in a personal care home, we go there. If the patient is in a facility, we go there. If they're in their own personal home, we go there.
Let's move to speak specifically about Amity Care.
Okay.
And I guess the direct question is, why are you at Amity Care? What makes them special?
I think one of the reasons for me, besides the fact that I have friends there, obviously, but one of the main reasons for me is that I personally believe that complementary services have an important role to play in hospice care, because there are patients out there that do not want medication. They don't want to be so drugged out that they can't function. And while you can manage the meds, you know, that's one reason to offer the complementary alternatives. The other reason is to offer them for those people that really don't want them. And so the complementary alternatives can very often help with pain relief and that. And the other reason is because of the stress management factor. And that's a huge thing, because the patient gets stressed, the family gets stressed. And so there's massage, there's Reiki, which is a form of energy work. We talked a little bit about the singing bowls, the crystal singing bowls, which many people don't know about, but those things. There's hypnotherapy or guided imagery or visualization, teaching relaxation techniques, those kinds of things. So there are lots of things that we can bring in that it's forward thinking, really.
Let me see if I can develop this with simple terms. Most hospices, and this is a generalization, so I don't want anyone to get angry at me, but most hospices are driven or use prescription drug therapies to manage the pain. And,
yes.
Okay. If I'm hearing you correctly, Amity Care does the same, but they have an alternative way, a more holistic approach. Is that a proper way of looking at it?
I think so. We try to customize the care a little bit more, make it a little bit more personal to our patients and families' needs, so that they have some options there. And in particular, we had one family that came in and they were into alternatives. And so rather than a lot of medication, although we did have some, this particular patient wanted the massage, they wanted Reiki. They wanted Reiki especially. And then when they found out about the singing bowls, they were really keen on that. And so we had, it was a wonderful experience being with them. I felt privileged.
Great. And this might be a good segue over to your other association organization called LifeWorks. So yes. Why don't you tell us a little bit about LifeWorks and how that kind of dovetails with what we were just speaking of?
I started out, like I said, 20 years ago. I got into hypnotherapy and I got into it. When I got into it, I thought, wow, this is something that will open doorways for me into another realm. And it has done that. I have ended up exploring alternative therapies, and that's where most of my education has come in. It's not, most of my education has been very non-traditional, with neuro-linguistic programming, hypnotherapy, Reiki, all those kinds of things that I'm really interested in, things that heal the spirit. Mm-hmm. I started with Hypnosis Works, and then a few years ago got into the hospice, and then I realized that I had all these other modalities to use and wanted to be able to share them. So I started to think about LifeWorks, but LifeWorks is actually much more than that, even because, again, dovetailing with the hospice work, there's a need for grief work out there for people to have a place to go. And so my thought is that the hospice industry, most of them don't really have time to do this.
Right.
Hospice Atlanta is one of the few that does. Mm-hmm. But in a city this size, there needs to be more. So I'm thinking that I actually would like to do one or two grief retreats a week and offer to them to the Atlanta community at large. Mm-hmm. And so that people have a place to go and they can have complementary alternatives there. They can have therapists there, and there's a definite program for them to walk through no matter what kind of grief it is. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking at that. I've formed a threshold choir, and a threshold choir is a choir that sings for people who are struggling with living and or dying. And so I actually formed that already, and we've sung for our first patients.
And why is that therapeutical?
Oh my gosh, music is so powerful. I mean, you know, you know yourself, the music has the power to move us, and it can put a smile on our face, or it can calm us down, or get us excited and revved up and ready to go. Yeah.
Besides it being purely emotion, is there quote unquote scientific support of
oh yeah. Well, I don't have any of that with me, but we do know there is music therapy, mm-hmm. and music therapy is specifically designed to use certain pieces of music that actually we've already documented that can help us learn better, mm-hmm. faster. It can bring our blood pressure down. Or it can raise it, depending on how excited we get. You know, I think of Barry White again. No, again.
Now, when you're working with the families of the person in hospice, how what are the things that they tell you maybe after their loved one passes? Like, do they just
grateful.
Say, I need that counseling? Or are they like, okay, thanks, and that's the end, bye? What is kind of their frame of mind at the end of this?
Many families are open to receiving letters that will provide them with information about the grief process. When we're working with the families, we actually, after the death of a loved one, we will assess the family as what risk level are they in bereavement? And then if they're low risk, then and according to what they want, we will send them letters and make a few phone calls, you know, once a month or whatever the need is. If they're moderate risk, we might have our social worker get in there, our bereavement coordinator go in there and work with them. We could even send in volunteers to spend time with them. And just, again, it's providing them an avenue. If they're high risk, then we're going to look to get them.
What does high risk look like to you? Are they like, oh, my God, like they're, you know,
high risk
out?
High risk is they're non-functional. They're really non-functional. And or they might even threaten to commit suicide or, you
is
know.
Is that typically the spouse or could it be the child?
Well, first of all, it's very rare.
Right.
To have someone who's high risk, but it would be certainly more likely to be the spouse than it would be mm-hmm. anyone else. Yeah.
Besides LifeWorks and Amity Care Hospice, Cheryl, is there any other organizations that you have that's dear to your heart you'd like to speak of?
Yeah, the Season for Nonviolence. It's actually going on right now. It's spawned off of the Martin Luther King, Gandhi, and Cesar Chavez. Work, and it runs from January 30th to April 4th. And it's been formed by AGENT, which is the Association for Global New Thought. And it's an amazing program. It's a grassroots effort that is geared toward spiritual activism. Mm-hmm. And it's about the way that we communicate with each other. And it's more than that. It's not just the way that you and I communicate with each other, but the way that we communicate with ourselves, whether we beat ourselves up or whether we beat somebody else up verbally, mm-hmm. how we treat the planet and our resources, it just encompasses a lot. And so it is a time, not that nonviolence has a season, but it's about creating an awareness about nonviolence and inviting people into that and encouraging them to learn more about how to communicate more effectively, more clearly, more lovingly, mm-hmm. more respectfully, and the same with the planet itself. We have this beautiful plot of land, you know, that we get to live on, and that provides us with so much. And it just seems little to ask for us to respect that. And rather than, I look around sometimes and I see things thrown on the ground, you know, like when you're traveling on the highways mm-hmm. or on the streets, and I think to myself, would you do that in your own house? Why, you know?
Sadly, they would.
But yes, I mean, that's something that's very, it's very near and dear to my heart, and because I need to be educated as well, so it's something that I'm promoting in the church that I was part of before and now, and the new church that I'm working with, I'm promoting it during the season.
Great. Okay, good. Let me ask you this question. If I were to ask you to give a family one piece of advice regarding any aspect of care as it relates to aging or disability, what piece of advice might you give them?
I would tell people to reach out. Mm-hmm. You know, Americans are pretty independent people. You know, we think that we should be able to do it ourselves. And I think that we need a community. You know, we say it takes a child it takes a community to raise a child, but it takes a community to get through your daily life. I mean, our food, our housing, everything that we get comes from somewhere else. Mm-hmm. We don't build those things. So if you've got somebody that you're caring for at home, it's important to reach out, find the resources that are available to you, and get a team of people that can support you during that process so that you don't burn out.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think that's really vital. And the same thing with hospice. Call sooner rather than later.
That's great. Okay.
Yeah.
For those who are listening that want to reach you or reach out to you, reach out to Amity Care. How can they do that?
For Amity Care, they would reach me at cburney, B-U-R-N-E-Y, at amitycarehospice.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if they want to reach you personally for LifeWorks,
then that would be info@lifeworksinstitute.org.
Okay. All right. Well, Cheryl, we certainly appreciate you being on our show today.
My pleasure.
Half an hour flew by. Great information. We certainly appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Sure.
And that's it for today. We want to thank, again, Cheryl for being with us. We want to thank our listeners for tuning in and remind them that if they wish to listen to a recording of today's broadcast, they can do so at eugeriaradio.com. And in closing, if the youth of our nation is its greatest national resource, it goes without saying that the seniors of our nation is its greatest national treasure. Thank you and God bless.
Eugeria Radio is sponsored by Griswold Special Care and broadcast live from the Business Radio X studios.